The first robbery wasn't even his idea. In 1981, when William Outlaw was 13, Pearl moved the family from Kewview to a recently constructed townhouse on Shelton Avenue in New Hallville, in the heart of New Haven. The new townhouse had three bedrooms and new appliances and gleaming wood floors. For Pearl, it was a triumphant move, delivering the family from the projects. For Outlaw, it was like moving to Manhattan from the hinterlands of New Jersey. The central blocks along New Hallville's main artery, Dixwell Avenue, were populated with pharmacies, gas stations, diners, and hairstylists, and adjoined by leafy residential side streets. But the main reason for Pearl's move was to be closer to the world-famous Winchester Gun Factory, where she was now a forewoman. The factory, a few blocks from the new townhouse, was a small city unto itself. During World War II, 21,000 people had worked there, and to meet demand, Winchester's managers, against the objections of white employees, advertised in the South, inducing generations of African Americans to come north. By the 1980s, Winchester was beginning the end of its run. The company would cease production in 2006. But for a single mom, like Pearl, without a high school education, the job paid well and had excellent benefits. A few years later, when Outlaw was shot multiple times during his gang career, he was sometimes treated at Yale New Haven Hospital on his mother's superb Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance. But for all the advantages of the move, New Hallville was still among the poorest and most violent parts of the city. New Hallville's houses, hearkening back to its prosperous industrial past, were large and sprawling. But now, few single families could afford an entire home, and the dwellings were divided up into as many as 6 apartments. A good number of the houses hadn't been painted for years, and the small yards were often untended and overgrown. Certain blocks, such as Lilac Street, not far from Pearl's townhouse, were famous as drug marts. New Hallville was less than 3/4 of a mile from Yale, but the university may as well have been a continent away. Virtually no one in New Hallville, unless they worked a maintenance or kitchen job at the university, had any reason to go to the campus. And the vast majority of Yalies, had you queried them, would have no idea that New Hallville even existed. Ever practical, Pearl moved the family over the summer so as not to disrupt the school year for her children. Outlaw would start 8th grade in the fall. From the moment of his arrival in New Hallville, Outlaw caused commotion. At first, no one particularly knew him. In those days, before the advent of social media, New Haven was still a city of strict geographical neighborhoods, largely isolated from one another. But Outlaw, now approaching 6 feet and well over 200 pounds, and developing a penchant for flamboyant neon-colored clothes, was an instant mark. He was constantly challenged to fistfights, and dispatched opponents with the same efficiency as he had at Kewview. One of the first of the boys that Outlaw met was Stevie Saunders. A year older than Outlaw, which was just enough of a difference that Outlaw looked up to him. Stevie was a mouthy, energetic boy of medium height and built like a wrestler. He was current on the latest rap and soul music, wore a thick gold chain around his neck, the only kid in the neighborhood to do so, and kept himself in great shape. Outlaw took to hanging out with Stevie on Dixwell Avenue, flirting with girls, and mixing it up with older boys and young men. Outlaw saw that Stevie had access to a steady stream of expensive possessions, designer sweatsuits, the latest Nike and Adidas sneakers, a series of new gold chains, which was surprising because his family had little money. In bits and pieces of conversation, Stevie revealed to Outlaw that he was working as a stick-up artist, robbing stores and individuals around town, armed with a gun.